on the couch with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning, Suzanne.
It's great to have you here. And we were listening there to the theme music from the soundtrack of the series Big Little Lies. Have you seen it? Have you seen it, Sabine?
I have seen the first three episodes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I can't wait to find out what's happening next.
If you're not familiar with this, it's an HBO series. It is starring Reese Witherspoon, Laura Dern, Nicole Kidman, and the list goes on. And it's about a group of people living in the Big Sur in California, and they're moms, and they do the school run. And it's about, there's a lot going on in this series, but it's about competition between the moms, between the children. It's about their marriages, their relationships, and how their lives intertwine with each other. It is fantastic. Now, I did a flight, one of the many flights I did in the last 5 weeks. What a great flight it was, because I had 7 hours back to back. I watched the whole lot from beginning to end.
That's my plan for my next trip.
I highly recommend it if you really want to get into some good fiction there. But yeah, Big Little
Not
Lies.
Not so much fiction, Suzanne. Not so much fiction, actually.
Yeah.
It looks, you know, from the first few episodes that I've seen, it looks a lot like a lot of pathological behavior.
Yeah, that's right, because they are on the front of it, they look like they are women that have it all. You know, they're beautiful, they've got beautiful children, they've got beautiful husbands, they live in these amazing houses overlooking the ocean, and you know, life's supposedly good, but when you start to scratch behind the surface, there are cracks, and some are huge cracks in their relationships and their behaviors. And I did think of you and Thoraya when I was watching it, and I was thinking psychologists will have a field day with this series.
Absolutely. I really can't wait to figure out the ending.
Yeah, there is a mystery. I won't give too much away, but there is a mystery happening through this series as well. So, yeah, it's a good summer watch. If you can get hold of it, it's on HBO. Watch it. It's really very interesting and very entertaining. And it has a great soundtrack. Now, we're talking about loneliness today. We're kicking off with that. And in fact, there's quite a lot of loneliness with the characters in that series of Big Little Lies. As I said, it looks like they are have it all, but they are human beings. We're all human, and we're all going to suffer some form of loneliness at some time or another. And for others, you can be very open about that. You can reach out and connect. For some, it is something that they will just hide, you know, not show, not share, not want people to think or know that they're feeling lonely. They want to keep up appearances,
of course. So idea of loneliness seems to come up a lot, you know, when people come into therapy. And people may feel lonely for many different reasons. I think it's important to highlight the difference between loneliness, which is a subjective state of mind. It's a feeling that you have. Even loneliness does not mean that you're physically alone. You could be with other people and still feel lonely. So loneliness is different from choosing to be alone or feeling or wanting to be alone.
So is that
what
we call,
this is important
to understand that?
Yes.
Aloneness, we hear
aloneness,
that term.
Yes.
So aloneness is what?
Aloneness is a choice. It's voluntary versus loneliness, which is a feeling that something is imposed on you. It's an involuntary state of mind. So you could be in a room full of people and still feel disconnected, lonely, as if they don't understand you. So loneliness is a subjective experience rather than aloneness, which is a choice that, you know what, I want to be alone for now. Aloneness does not mean that you feel lonely. Aloneness is when you feel connected to yourself. Loneliness is when you feel disconnected from everyone around you. You don't have to be just alone in the room. You know, it's that feeling that usually is found in depression, you know.
I wonder if loneliness, the term, I just, you know, started the show sharing, it was from a news article from the UK, saying in that article, and it's also in a lot of research, that loneliness is like you know, smoking or being obese. It could be that it could have that much of an impact on your physical health, loneliness, which made me wonder. And in that particular article, it was focusing on the UK and saying that Britain's coming up as one of the as the loneliest European place, a country, which is interesting in itself. But I just made me think, you know, doing this show over the years, the word stress has become very commonplace. It didn't used to be a common word. Now it is. I wonder if loneliness is going to be the next thing that we're becoming more aware of and starting to understand where it stems from and how it could impact people's lives negatively.
Well, loneliness can, I mean, we experience loneliness for different reasons. Not everyone feels lonely for the same reasons. So people may feel lonely in their workplace because they're not getting along with their colleagues. They don't feel that they are connecting or that they could be understood. Some other people could feel lonely within their family. You know, we feel lonely for different reasons at different stages of our lives. Children can feel lonely. Teenagers can feel lonely, you know, if they're not part of the cool group or of the cool gang in school. Moms can feel lonely, you know, if they're not part of the mom club at school. So it's there's no one reason or one characteristic for loneliness. Again, it's very individual. It's a very personal feeling that makes you feel very, very sad. And very, very disconnected as well.
Well, one of our listeners has texted in feeling exactly that. They've just been sharing their thoughts, saying that they feel lonely and feel sad and they feel disconnected. There's lots of other things they're describing as well. So when we come back, we'll address this message and more. Do send in your messages 4001 or via the Messenger app for free. And looking here at this article, this is saying chronic loneliness is a modern day epidemic. Humans were not designed to be solitary creatures. We evolved to survive in tribes. The need to interact is deeply ingrained in our genetic code, so much so, says John Cassiopo, that the absence of social connection triggers the same primal alarm bells as hunger, thirst, and physical pain. And I'm on the couch today with the clinical psychologist, that is Sabine Scaff from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. We are starting today by talking about loneliness. Is this something that you feel? Does it concern you or not? Let me know your thoughts, 4001. Sabine's here to help you on any issues you might be facing today as well. So if you want to send through your questions on 4001 or via the Messenger app for free, or you can call us on 04423. I've forgotten the number. I've been away for 5 weeks and there you go. What is it? Can't remember.
The one up here.
I'll come back to you with the telephone number. And when we're looking here at this article, there's a couple here that I wanted to flag up with you, Sabine, one which you brought to the table. A group of about 20 men, all fathers in their 30s and 40s, gathered at a home in Oakland, California a month ago to talk fatherhood. Alarmingly, when asked how many of them had real friends, confidants with whom they could talk honestly and vulnerably about life, be open with them on a regular basis through good times and bad, only two of them raised their hands. Now, this sort of flags up what you were saying earlier, is that loneliness can happen to anyone, anytime. It's not sort of under one category or one profile, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. And it's important to highlight the gender differences in terms of how you're experiencing loneliness. We as humans are hardwired for connection and dependency, but there is a slight gender difference because research has shown that women are more of social creatures, you know, because of evolution. You know, they want to communicate, they want to feel connected more. They're the ones who raise the kids, they bond, and they make sure everyone is feeling a part of the family. From an evolutionary perspective, men were out there on their own, hunting, bringing the food, defending, protecting, and so on. So this is still hardwired in our genes, even in modern day society. So yes, I mean, when you look at men don't have those close, intimate connections with other men. They bond over sports, over an activity. It's more physical. So they don't have that need. But women have this need for intimacy, intimate relationships more. And when they don't have it, they experience loneliness. They're more vocal and expressive about it, whereas men tend to withdraw and not talk about it as much.
Is it always the case that you would be aware that you are lonely? It might seem like a strange question, but, you know, we've sort of skirted around what loneliness is. But is it that somebody could be lonely without identifying that's what they are feeling or identifying that's what they're going through?
This is a very important question. Most of the people that talk about loneliness in sessions and therapy, they report a feeling of emptiness. It's more this, you know, ultimately when you probe them and you discuss their feelings of loneliness, the feeling of emptiness, of that space, you know, not feeling anchored, not feeling that they're belonging. This is the scary part, more than loneliness. You could feel lonely or decide to be alone, but it's the feeling of not belonging, not being part of something bigger, that emptiness, that void that is very, very, very scary. And most people who have depression have that kind of physical sensation. They tell me, I feel empty. I feel like there's a hole in my chest. This is the scary part, more than actually being alone.
So that's interesting. Let me just be clear there then. You could be lonely but not necessarily suffering from depression.
Yes.
However, it could be something that leads to depression.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the biggest symptoms of depression, which sometimes goes unnoticed, is called anhedonia, which means lack of enjoyment. So things that you used to enjoy before, like being out with friends, doing activities, you no longer enjoy. This is where you feel kind of isolated and you want to withdraw because you don't understand what is going on, you know? So you keep wanting to be part of the things that you enjoyed, but you no longer enjoy them. This is more of depression. So yes, you can feel lonely sometime and not necessarily feel depressed, or it doesn't have to lead to depression. But when you are experiencing, you know, the real depression, depression as we diagnose it, ultimately you feel completely isolated and lonely, and that no one understands you, and you feel absolute void.
So we've got a message that's come in from one of our listeners. I won't say the name. Of course, you know, you can contact us anonymously throughout the show, whether it's via our SMS 4001 or on the Messenger app for free. And also the telephone number, I have remembered it, 04-423-1010. There you go. And I didn't need prompting. I just needed a few moments to get back into the swing of things. So yeah, do get in touch with us if you want to connect with Sabine today. So one of our listeners has messaged us, and we've also been speaking to them on the phone. They're saying they have this feeling of sadness, feel sad, feel lonely. Been to lots of different doctors for 2 to 3 years. Now, a bit of background on this person. They've been married twice. Their wife left them. They have friends, but don't feel accomplished. The support isn't making them feel any better either. There is a bit of support there. They've been to lots of doctors. They're on medication, on antidepressants, which is making them want to sleep a lot, or they are feeling like they want to sleep a lot. I don't know if that's really directly connected to the antidepressants. Not had therapy, but just looking at ways to feel better and get better. So what does this sound like to you, Sabine?
This sounds very, very familiar. Very familiar, especially among young adults here in Dubai. I think this person, you know, needs to know that they are not alone, that they are taking the right measures, that sometimes we try different things to not feel depressed or sad or pretend to be happy. But that's not what's most important. In order to feel less lonely, you need... This person spoke about accomplished. You need to have a sense of purpose and meaning to what you're doing. I think this is the most important. Unfortunately, modern day society does not emphasize on this element of meaning. You know, there's a very good book written by Dr. Viktor Frankl. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. You know, and ultimately in therapy, this is what therapy helps you achieve. It's the quest of meaning and purpose. Each one of us has a purpose, and until we figure out what that purpose is, we try different things, we might succeed or not, but we also get frustrated. So I think medication enough is not the answer. It's a combination of medication and therapy that is most helpful. And speaking about that feeling of, you know, happiness and feeling accomplished, there's a very nice quote that I like. It's quite long. I don't know if we have the time to read it, but this author, his name is Hugh McKay, talks about happiness versus wholeness, talks about how the illusion of being happy the whole time is wrong, because we're teaching our kids that happiness is the default position, which is not true, because we learn much more about ourselves when we are sad, when we are disappointed, when we are frustrated. Happiness and being, you know, feeling joy is little things that happen to us that are also good, but they don't teach us much about ourselves. But experiencing frustration, pain, and so on is more important in building our character. So wholeness, feeling whole, feeling that you have meaning and purpose, is much more important than feeling happy, that illusion of being happy. A lot of people, when they come to therapy, talk about fake people, fake relationships, fake sense of satisfaction. This is how addictions are created, you know? Shopping and other elements that they resort to avoid feeling void and sadness and loneliness. Sometimes it's good to sit with your loneliness and take a good look at it and find out what it really means.
So let me share this quote by Hugh. No, absolutely. You brought this in today. Hugh McKay. This is how it goes. I actually attack the concept of happiness, the idea that I don't mind people being happy, but the idea that everything we do is part of the pursuit of happiness seems to me a really dangerous idea and has led to a contemporary disease in Western society, which is fear of sadness. It's a really odd thing that we're now seeing people saying, write down three things that make you happy today before you go to sleep, and cheer up, and happiness is our birthright, and so on. We're kind of teaching our kids that happiness is the default position. It's rubbish, according to Hugh McKay. He goes on to say, wholeness is what we ought to be striving for, and part of this is sadness, disappointment, frustration, failure, all of these things which make us who we are. Happiness and victory and fulfillment are nice little things that are also happen to us, but they don't teach us much. Everyone says we grow through pain, and then as soon as they experience pain, they say, quick, move on, cheer up. I'd like just for a year to have a moratorium on the word happiness and to replace it with the word wholeness. Ask yourself, is this contributing to my wholeness? And if you're having a bad day, it is.
I love this quote.
It's really interesting. It gives us a lot to think about and a lot to maybe look at ourselves and how we think, feel and behave. Absolutely. And how we deal with these things. So we're going to explore this further. Just coming back quickly to our listener, though, who, you know, everything they're feeling, is this erring towards depression? Would you say this is somebody that
the
is
person,
suffering?
Yes, mentioned that they're on medication, that, I mean, it has slightly improved their state of mind, but not significantly. And this is where therapy comes in, because it's a combination of both. I mean, to get out of depression is just an episode of your life. You need to understand what it's teaching you, what it is highlighting. It's not because you're weak that you become depressed. It's because you've been strong for a very long time. So accepting that fact is very, very helpful. You know, seeking professional help and therapy is the right move. when you're taking medication.
We'll pick up on this when we come back with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist based at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. And I'm joined today by clinical psychologist Sabine Scaff, who is based at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. She's the director, no less, and also when it comes to assessments, working a lot with parents and young people in the UAE, either on psychological disorders or on educational assessments as well. So she's here to take your questions on anything you might be concerned about or wondering about when it comes to yourself or your children. 4001. She brings a lot of professional experience to us here in the UAE. How many years have you been here now, Sabine?
14.
14. And you've been with the Human Relations Institute pretty much all that time.
Yes. Yeah. Since I landed.
Since you landed. There you are. You were greeted by Raymond
Dr. Hamden.
fantastic. That's amazing. And of course, now gone on to take control as well with Dr. Thuraya, working together at the Human Relations.
It's been such a positive experience so far. I mean, to continue the legacy of Dr. Hamden, it's really an honor.
Fantastic. And you have how many children now? Three, four?
Three.
Three. I know. It used to be the case.
I stopped at three.
You stopped, have you? Because it used to be the case that I only ever saw you when you were pregnant. It seemed to be like,
absolutely.
Hello, you're pregnant. You're still pregnant again there. But how wonderful. Yes. And how old are the children?
12, 8 and 4.
Oh. Well, it's great to have you here today.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, as I said, Sabine's here to take your questions on 4001 or via the Messenger app. You can also call us on 04 423 1010. We are talking about loneliness and what that means. And I thought I'd share this a little clip with you just to give a sense. Now, it's from the film Castaway, starring Tom Hanks. If you're not familiar with this, yes, Tom Hanks's character gets stranded on a desert island, and he is there, the character, Chuck Noland. He's en route to an assignment in Malaysia when his plane crashes over the Pacific Ocean during a storm. The sole survivor of the flight, this character, Chuck, washes ashore on the desert island, and when his efforts to sail away and contact help fail, he learns how to survive on the island, where he remains for years and years with nobody, no human contact, nobody else there. And you sort of follow his journey. But what happens to him is that he starts to make a connection with a handmade volleyball. Have a listen to this.
And what is your point? Well, we might just make it. Did that thought ever cross your brain? Well, regardless, I would rather take my chance out there on the ocean than to stay here and die on this island, spending the rest of my life talking to a volleyball! Wilson! Wilson!
Gosh, you can hear that complete sort of desperation and bereft, that feeling of bereft as he boots Wilson into the ocean.
I remember that.
Do you remember it? It's such an incredible idea, but it's real, isn't it? So real to what a human being needs.
Yes, there's a lot of despair, you know, when in his voice and what he's saying, a lot of frustration, anger, and then experiencing loss again, looking for Wilson, you know, it's very moving, because this is how some people feel, like they're stranded on an island, and there's that feeling of complete disconnect, complete, like, nobody understands me, no one knows what I'm feeling. This is what loneliness is. He's very distraught, and a lot of people feel that.
And the idea that just talking to something, to some, just even
rather
just,
than yeah,
than
absolutely,
with, you know, than with hearing the sound of your voice, even and the kind of what your imagination and what your mind is saying to you.
Yes, I mean, and psychology and psychopathology, you know, extreme isolation, you know, in cases of prisoners, war prisoners, or chronic illnesses where you have to be separated from your loved ones, can lead to some form of you know, delusion where you are talking to an imaginary person. You know, this is why sometimes also kids, you see they have their imagination is so wild, they have imaginary friends and so on. So we are hardwired for connection. We cannot sustain loneliness for a very long time. Like you said, you know, it affects our bodies physiologically, it lowers our immune system. Which leads to illnesses and diseases. So without connection, without feeling that we're part of something bigger, we can really become very, very depressed.
So there is the person that is surrounded by people but could be feeling lonely. And then there is the person that is living literally in an environment where there isn't many other people, or there are, you know, even there isn't anyone, you know.
So
that's also where it might develop. And looking here at this article from Cassiopo, who is the director of the University of Chicago Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience, an author of Loneliness, Human Nature and the Need for Social Connection. He's been studying loneliness for more than 20 years, and by now he recognises its tropes and has grown fond of the condition, which he feels is often misunderstood. Originally drawn to the subject because the existing literature characterised it as aversive with no redeeming qualities, he's conducted dozens of studies and meta-analysis on how loneliness affects the mind and body. In short, in small doses, it can be a valuable tool that enables us to read social cues, but long-term loneliness can be dangerous. He spoke with the writer spoke with this person, Cassiopeia, about why more people report chronic loneliness than they did 20 years ago, and why this uptake may contribute to the rising death toll in the United States, and whether or not the condition can be mitigated via medication. So we've been talking about what loneliness is. We could look a little bit more at why does loneliness cause this reaction. So as social animals, we survive because we form bonds which provide mutual aid. Humans don't do well if they're alone. If they get ostracized from the group, they may perish. And at the same time, we've exploited each other across human history. If a group excludes, an evolutionary tool adapted to enforce social norms and try to break away break back in, the group may not try as subtle and exclusionary behaviour the next time. The easiest way to exclude someone is to injure them. So there's lots going on there. The brain goes into self-preservation mode to promote short-term survival. So it's getting quite technical here. But loneliness is not designed to be chronic. Instead, it's very much like physical pain or hunger, and it's an aversive cue that alerts you to pay attention. And this is what I like is,
yes,
don't be afraid of it, but actually use the feeling to look at what's happening in your life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like what he said, you know, that it's useful in small doses. I think it's important to highlight here the idea that it's a preference as well. I mean, we have to talk about people who are introverted. You know, it's not that they want to be lonely, it's that they choose to be lonely. So it's different. It's a choice. A lot of, you know, introversion versus extroversion, extroverted people that recharge themselves in the presence of others versus introverted people who need to withdraw to recharge. And I think it's important not to confuse loneliness with introversion or even social anxiety, which is we can talk about this a little bit later. So in small doses, yes, it's important to withdraw and process all the information that you are receiving from the group. So everything with moderation, try to find a balance in your alone time. But loneliness is also something different. As the late Robin Williams said, I don't know if I can read this. He says, I used to think the worst thing in life was to end up alone, but it's not. The worst thing in life is to end up with people that make you feel alone. This is very sad. And it's also very, very common. Going back to our modern day society, why do you think we're more and more lonely? How come we feel more disconnected than ever with all the
technology?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're more connected in theory than we've ever been.
This is a virtual fake connection. You know, how many apps do we have that seemingly are supposed to connect people and introduce people to one another? May I name some, such as Tinder? You know, but when young adults come to therapy, they talk about how lonely, this makes them feel, because you click right or left and then you are either accepted or rejected based on a picture, which is very, very isolating, you know. So yes, I understand modern technology is here to help us, but the excess of it actually makes us feel more disconnected. There's a very good movie that was in the Cannes Festival, and it's called Disconnect. And this is a must watch, you know, to see how the new technology has negatively impacted our human connection.
Well, according to this article, why loneliness is being talked about more and is on the rise, they're saying they can't, you know, quantify the data exactly just yet, but do go on to say that some of the reasons why there's more loneliness awareness or people feeling lonely than before is we aren't as closely bound. We no longer live in the same village for generations, which means we don't have the same generational connections. That releases social constraints. Relationships are formed and replaced more easily today, like you just mentioned, Tinder, Match, eHarmony, all these kinds of places you can dial up and find friendships, connections and opportunities that didn't exist. In the last 15 years or so, many of those face-to-face connections have been replaced with social networking. We found that if you use social networking as a way to promote face-to-face conversation, it lowers loneliness. But if you use a destination as a replacement for the face-to-face, it increases loneliness.
Of course, how much can you connect with a picture? How much do you know about a person from just one picture? And who posts pictures of themselves being sad, crying, or lonely? What kind of pictures do we post? We're always happy and smiling. What can that tell about us as people? Not much. And this is the picture that you connect with. It's a fake facade, basically.
And you're a false sense of...
Of course.
You might think you're connecting, but actually it's not very deep. It's not on a very deep level. Or how do you take it further to become more meaningful, a relationship that's more meaningful and real? Well, when we come back, we'll be addressing this one about somebody that recently married just 5 months ago. And they're saying that they feel like almost like buyer's remorse after the event and find themselves crying a lot and also feeling lonely. And we'll address that. Keep your messages coming in. We've been talking about loneliness, and Sabine Scaff is here from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics on hand to take your questions on any issues. One that's come through, I've been speaking to the lady on the phone during the break there. Now, I mentioned it just before. So this person's recently married, been married for 5 months, and has a case of buyer's remorse, is how she's describing it. I feel I made a mistake and that my life was better before. I feel sad and alone despite having a very loving husband that would do anything for me. I find myself crying a lot and there is a weight on my chest. I'm seeing a therapist, but I don't feel any better. Now, I'll give you a bit of background on this person's story. She has known her husband. Before they were married, they worked together for 4 years. They were romantically involved for two. She says that her family got involved with it in the relationship quite early on. And that she said she describes herself as quite a doubtful person anyway, an overthinker. I did always have some doubts, but I'd never really resolved them before we got married. And after getting married, feel that I've maybe settled. So feeling drained, feeling sad, emotionally confused. Did I do the right or wrong thing? She goes on to ask, is this normal? Maybe people do go through this after, you know, getting married.
There are a lot of things to discuss. From a general point of view, yes, I mean, the first year of marriage is very difficult because it's a period of adjustment to the other person's real personality, you know, all these small traits that come up that you don't really see when you're just dating. So there's that, and also there's an adjustment to your new identity. There is a change in identity. You used to be single, now you're married, you're someone's wife, you have responsibilities, you have rights, and so on. So a lot of young adults, you know, I'm not sure how old this person is, but struggle in finding, you know, in navigating this new identity. So it is a struggle, but in this person's case specifically, it seems that she was not 100% sure that this is what she wanted, and she was kind of cornered into the marriage because maybe of cultural reasons. It's not very clear, and she had doubts that she was not able to discuss with her future husband or her family. So there is some sort of lack of assertiveness and allowing others to make decisions for you.
And also, I may be getting caught up in it all.
Yeah, of course.
You know, in the organizing, the arrangements. But also, she describes herself as an overthinker.
Yeah.
And I find that, I mean, that's a whole area, a whole topic, a whole show in itself. But the actual fact where, like in anything really, any big decision in your life, when do you stop the thinking, when you've thought it through every possible different way? I mean, is it right? Is it wrong? And when do you rely on what feels right, what is inside your instinct?
This stems from a lot of anxiety. You know, deciding, making the decision to get married is a life-changing decision that cannot be taken lightly. And preferably, I mean, you want yourself to make the decision and not be carried, you know, away by the event of things. I think, you know, it's been 5 months. I think it's a good idea for her to discuss her feelings with her husband or a close friend, because it's just, you know, they've been married for 5 months. There are no kids at this point. So this is something that could make her feel relieved, you know, just to address these issues, to express them to someone other than the therapist. You know, therapy is very, very helpful. But, you know, you need to confront these doubts because you're starting a new life and you want to do the right thing for the future.
And also sometimes when we get sort of stuck in our thinking, we're fixating on something. I'm not to take away the significance, but sometimes it can be a good idea to maybe go away and do something and think about something completely different. You know, she says she doesn't go out as much as she did before.
Yes.
Maybe there's something you could do together with your husband.
There is definitely,
or something you could be doing to maybe take your mind away, not forever, but to give yourself some space or distance from it if it's all consuming, but you're not feeling any better and you're not moving forward.
There's ultimately a change in lifestyle when you're two and not one. You don't have the same kind of you know, freedom to come and go. I think it's important to talk to people who know you, who have accompanied you throughout your life, because they have a different perspective from the outside. They will not do therapy with you. I mean, therapy will definitely help her understand why she has allowed for things to take place when she had doubts. But just, you know, a perspective from someone else would help shed a different light. And also, if the crying spells continue, the anxiety continues, the possibility of medication should also be considered. Again, a combination of both is the most successful.
And not necessarily the first port of call either, but just a consideration.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So the crying, because the crying is a symptom of potentially depression.
Underlying mild depression. It doesn't have to be, I mean, yes, it's confusing and it can make you very feeling unstable, but not crying that much. I mean, this is an indication and she needs to take a look at
that.
It.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, we wish you all the best. We hope you help there. And keep your messages coming in. If this is something that resonates for you, that sense also of isolation or loneliness, looking for help today, 4001 or via the Messenger app. When we come back, we're going to be exploring some people's stories, maybe that might surprise you, that have been feeling lonely, or actually when you think about it, it makes sense. And again, digging deeper into the differences between being lonely and aloneness, and also extroversion and introversion. What would you say you are? Who, what kind of personality are you? Are you an introvert or an extrovert? Let us know. And your sort of social behavior, if you like, what makes you thrive and what makes you recoil or maybe become inhibited or retreat in some way. So if you're feeling lonely, you're not alone, according to this article coming out of the United Kingdom. It was announced that as many as 1 in 8 adults, around about 7 million people in the UK, do not have a close friend or confidant. What do you think? How does that apply to you? Does it apply to you or someone you know? The research conducted by Relate and Relationships Scotland also suggests that 1 in 5 adults felt lonely all of the time. Feelings of isolation can manifest themselves for a number of reasons. We've been talking about that this morning. That's coming out of the UK. What do you think about living here in the UAE? I'm on the couch today with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics based in JLT. You can SMS us today on 4001 or via the Messenger app. You can call us on 04 423 1010, and that's with any issues you might be facing in looking, you know, facing today and looking for help or guidance for you or a friend, a colleague, a family member. Sabine's here to help. Also, just to say thank you to Costa Coffee, who have delivered coffee this morning and a nice basket. I thought it was a little, almost like a little picnic basket today, promoting their new range of lunches and breakfasts. So we've had a little bit of the panini already. There's a lovely kind of, you know, granola and yogurt, and also there for lunch, nice and looking very healthy, in fact, with chicken and cucumber salad, olives, nuts. So it's all part of keeping us healthy, keeping us nourished. And one of the things they're highlighting is the significance of breakfast. Now, we need to fuel our bodies to keep us energized, to keep our brain functioning as well as our bodies. And yet the psychologist in the room tells me today you haven't had breakfast.
I rushed to come here because it's very important to discuss this topic, and it's always amazing to be on your show.
Well, thank you, but I'm very concerned, so I'm handing over to you now. Yes, the yogurt and granola, and you can help yourself to the lovely salad as well, and and maybe a bit of coffee too. But you know, really important. And we were having, so now the producer of the show and I were having a little snack beforehand, because what I've learned about my body is that where I would go for 3 meals a day, and that's great, is actually I'm having maybe 5 but smaller portions. Mm. To keep those blood sugars regulated. Yes, so have a little bit to bite before I go on air, whereas I never used to eat before going on air, but now I have a little bite about an hour before, just a snack or something. We had half the panini each from Costa, and that kind of helps me get through the show, and I don't come off wanting to eat my arm, you know, just like, which is what used to happen. But I'm saying all this because actually for all of us, it's just about, especially with the hot weather, keeping hydrated, keeping energized, keeping nourished, not only keeps us going, but it also keeps our mood, it affects, you know, keeps us feeling better, communicating better, our brain functioning better. All of those things are important for our well-being,
of course, and to avoid being hangry, which is what happens to me.
Yeah, watch out.
I'm angry and hungry, it's a deadly combination.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we've been talking about loneliness today, we're going to look more about into that more, but also about how loneliness and looking at these figures and research about how it impacts our physiology, you know, our health. They're saying now that loneliness could be as bad as obesity and smoking for people's physical health. So what do you think about that? Let me know on 4001. And also, if you are struggling at all, do let us know. We're here to help. Christian's texting to say, is the world we access through screens, through internet, technology, anywhere, anytime, that screen time, it's a sign of increasingly alone or lonely societies.
Absolutely. This is what I was just, going to discuss, because if we go back to the attachment theory, there's a research done by Harlow in the 60s on attachment, on how, you know, humans attach, animals attach. So what he did in his research is place a mother figure monkey made out of steel with milk that would feed the monkey, and then another fake mother monkey, but that is warm. He put like a fake coat on this mother. Ultimately, the baby monkey would go feed, but would search for warmth with the other fake mother that is furry. So this tells us that we do need warmth and connection. And how does a screen make us feel connected, even though it opens the horizon for such amount of knowledge for us? But does it make us really feel connected to the world?
Yeah, so that word, so we are connected, but we're not feeling, we can't feel the warmth, we can't feel the scent. And, you know, we were listening earlier in the week to Jo Malone talking, I mean, the power of scent and the scent of a person. And it might be subliminal, but as human beings, that's, and we go right back to, you know, evolution is that, you know, primal is that sense of scent.
Yes, we are digitally connected when we're on a screen. And when you're on a screen, you are alone because you're not looking around you. You're not making eye contact. You're not smiling at anyone. You're not looking at other people's body language and nonverbal communication. So yes, we're connected, but to a computer, not to another human being. Yes, we have the knowledge, we access everything that we need, but does this really make us feel that we belong? This is the question. Among today's youth, you know, there's a FOMO, fear of missing out, which is I'm the opposite of FOMO. What was it? It will come to me. So FOMO, fear of missing out, and YOLO, you only live once. This is the kind of mentality that we live in, that you have not to miss anything, or you will be outcast, you will be weird, you will be cringy, all of these words that people, you know, will judge you if you don't go to every work party, if you are not invited to every single event. You know, people want to be there. They want to make sure that their pictures are posted so others know that they're there. Are they happy? I'm not sure. I'm not sure they are. I'm not sure they feel connected. I'm not sure that this kind of lifestyle makes them feel less lonely.
Well, a lot of that's about perceptions, isn't
yes.
it? And I suppose if you don't know any different, if you haven't felt a deeper level of connection, as in, and so if you're young and this is all you've known, that is your point of reference. That's what you're benchmarking everything on. So who's to say, you know, it might, as we evolve over the next 50 years and that generation that's only ever been connected via technology. And not all people are doing that. Still many people and young people. I know my nephew's not interested in social media. He's 19, but he's 20. He's not bothered about that. He's not bothered about going on social media. He wants to have conversations. He wants to meet people. He wants to be out doing things with others, as do many. And of course, there is some balance. Some do both, and some are doing more of one than the other.
The recent research on that, on social media and modern technology, shows that it's highly addictive for children and teenagers because it activates the center of pleasure. And you want more of that. So it's addictive as any other substance or any other coping mechanism. So it's your to-go-to in times of anxiety. All you want to do is be online or be connected to your phone, not connected to other people. So this is the danger of it for the new generation.
So situations where you might feel lonely, there's one. We've talked about isolation, actually literally physical isolation.
Yes.
We've also highlighted the fact that feeling lonely to a certain extent can be a good thing. You know, connect as a human being, feel, which means good and bad, to feel all of those different things. It's when you're not feeling anything, you need to be concerned. Mm-hmm. Sit with yourself is the term. Sit with your loneliness sometimes.
Yes,
face it,
look at it, see what it means, what's its value. Now, a lot of, some things that come up in sessions in therapy is that sometimes people come and tell me, you know, I think I'm ADHD, attention deficit. I have attention deficit disorder. Okay, what makes you think that? I can't get anything done. I keep forgetting. I procrastinate and so on. So they diagnose themselves with ADHD. And then when we probe and throughout the sessions, we realize that this is anxious agitation. It's not attention deficit. Anxious agitation. Why do we do that? To avoid feeling empty. So we keep our schedules full. We cannot sit still. We cannot rest. They feel restless. It's that feeling of restlessness that is there to avoid feeling lonely. And ultimately what they say is that I don't want to not do anything because I don't want to be alone with my thoughts.
Yeah.
So this is what ultimately comes up in sessions. But this realization comes later on and not immediately. And this is where the real work, starts, because what are your thoughts? What are your feelings that you're trying to avoid with keeping a busy life? You know, it's very important to address this.
Well, you're a working mom. You've got three children. Mm-hmm. You're a very busy lady. Are you ever on your own?
I make sure to have some time on my own because I'm the kind of person that needs to recharge. It's my nature. You know, I need sometimes like half an hour or an hour just to be alone with a book or something, or even listening to music just to recharge. And I do ask for it. I've learned to ask for it because when you're overwhelmed, you're frustrated, you become not yourself with other people. And sometimes you don't want to take it out on other people. So alone time, if you need it, if it's your personality, is of utmost importance, I think.
What kind of personality do you have? Do you think about it? Are you somebody that thrives when you are alone or maybe in a quieter environment? So you're not good around lots of people, busy, loud activity? Or are you the other way? Actually, you thrive being, you're a social being. You need to be around people. You like a lively office. So where do you stand? Does it occur to you that you might be maybe in the wrong place to suit your personality? Now, Sabine, this is really important from a psychologist's point of view. Mm. There's a lot of research been done into understanding what kind of personality you are.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of people come in thinking they suffer from shyness or social anxiety when they're actually introverted. Introverted people seem to be misunderstood. You know, Susan Cain is a very famous author who wrote Quiet, The Power of the Introvert in a World That Can't Stop Talking, which, highlights how introverts are quite different than extroverts, but not less effective in the workplace, for example. So actually, it relieves people to know that they could be introverts. We use the Myers-Briggs. It's a type personality indicator. And I tell them, you know, just because people who are louder are, if you want, more exposed and they market themselves, doesn't make you less important. It's just that they present themselves to the world quite differently. It kind of relieves them to know that they're introverts. And there's a new word, it's called ambivert. Ambivert is when you're both. So you do need people, but then you need to withdraw and recharge so there's a balance of both. And none of us are completely introverted or completely extroverted. We do need our moments, you know, to recharge either way. So I think it's important to recognize that being an introvert is not a disorder. It's not a disease. And your time alone should be respected if this is what you need.
Well, I think the great thing about this kind of testing and research, because some might say, is because the introvert probably gets the bad rap.
Of course.
Somehow in society it suggests that being out, being sociable, having lots of friends, having, you know, being loud means that you're more successful, you're happier.
Absolutely.
You're somebody to be around, and that leaves the introvert left out in the cold a little bit.
Yes.
And if you imagine that in the work environment or in certain
school.
Exactly, any group,
yeah,
where actually you can see people gravitating to that extrovert and isolating the introvert.
Absolutely.
Even more, because although they might be quieter or shy or like their own company, it doesn't mean they have to be excluded. It's always nice to be asked.
Yes.
It's always nice to be acknowledged, and it's nice to be valued.
Absolutely.
And just because you're not the loudest, funniest person with loads of friends doesn't mean that you're not you haven't got something to contribute, something to offer, and that you should be not valued as much as anybody else.
I think this is very important, especially in the teenage years, during adolescence, because this is the period of time when you're the peer group is the most important. It's no longer the family. The teenager is detaching from the family context. It's separation, individuation. They're thriving for autonomy, but they also want to belong to that peer group. So if you don't have these, the extrovert skills, you have the introvert skills, it's very easy to fall into the trap of not feeling accepted, and then you start questioning yourself, am I not good enough? Am I not cool enough? Like, what am I doing wrong? So this is where the feeling of loneliness and isolation kicks in. It's not the introversion in itself. You know,
but it's also not about saying you've got to try and be more...
No, absolutely not. Cannot go against your nature.
Right. So once you understand what your true nature is, then you might feel the relief that it's okay.
Yes.
And actually, I'm feeling better because I am in a quieter environment. I'm looking at career choices or going for jobs that suit my personality.
Of course,
as opposed to putting myself into a career or a scenario or even in a social group that really doesn't marry who I truly am.
Yes, absolutely. I think Einstein spoke about this when he said that you can't ask a fish to climb a tree. It will feel that it's stupid its whole life because it's not meant to climb a tree. So if you understand yourself and you understand your needs, your personal needs, then it doesn't matter what others think or how they view you, because you understand your own limitations, but also you value them.
And messages coming in here, one from saying that, I just wanted to share, I'm like the doctor, I need alone time, but find it difficult to find it as I'm working, and when I come home I have to attend to my children. Then I take my mother for a walk and then I watch something or read, but then it's midnight and I find it difficult to wake up the next day, and then the cycle continues.
Yes, I understand this person's challenges. It doesn't have to be on a daily basis. It could be once or twice a week, just for you to do something that you know would make you happy. So, not happy as in terms of happiness, it would make you feel fulfilled or accomplished. You must find that time, otherwise you will be burnt out and you will be overwhelmed. And then you will not be able to be there for others the way that you would like to be. For your children or family members or work. Yes, I understand that by midnight is the only time that you can, regroup with yourself. But even if it's for 10 minutes or even if it's twice a week, you know, you need to tell the people that your loved ones, you need to tell them how you function. You need to tell them that this is your time, even if it's for 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
I think that's
minutes.
The key, isn't it?
Yes.
And actually, I say at least an hour. I think it's okay with all the hours in the day to say, I mean, you're going, no, yeah. I've got three children. I don't have three children. But I still think you have to. You have
yes.
to find a way of
you
saying.
You need to have me time.
This, and it may be you make it that it's, you know, you make it.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be just reading or just relaxing or going for a walk or driving around. Just to be alone with your thoughts, to regroup your thoughts and to be ready for other people, to be ready to give them what you want to give them and what they want from you. I think it's very important.
Very important indeed. Now, you mentioned the word burnout there, and burnout at work isn't just about exhaustion, according to the Harvard Business Review. It's also about loneliness. Now, more and more people are feeling tired and lonely at work. In analysing the General Social Survey of 2016, they found that compared with roughly 20 years ago, keep saying 20 years in every article, people are twice as likely to report that they are always exhausted. Close to 50% of people say they're often or always exhausted due to work. This is a shockingly high statistic, and it's a 32% increase from 2 decades ago. What's more, there is a significant correlation between feeling lonely and work exhaustion. The more people are exhausted, the lonelier they feel.
Of course, because their energy is drained, so they don't have time even to consider socializing or even self-care. You know, Dr. Hamden used to talk a lot about work-life balance and burnout. It's his baby, you know. He used to train people on how to keep that work-life balance, and I think it's important. Yes, exhaustion may lead or leads to loneliness, because when you're exhausted, you are meeting only your basic needs. Sleep, eat, repeat. So there's no time for a connection.
So it's saying here, I'm just looking at this, the happiness track, found that 50% of people across professions, from the non-profit sector to the medical field, were burnt out. And this isn't just a problem for busy, overworked executives. Through the high rates of loneliness and burnout among that group are well known. Our work suggests that the problem is pervasive across professions and up and down corporate hierarchies. Loneliness, whether it results from social isolation or exhaustion, has serious consequences for individuals. Again, John Cassiopo is in this, Cassiopo is in this article as well, a leading expert on loneliness and co-author of The Loneliness, Human's Nature, Need for Social Connection, emphasizes its tremendous impact on psychological and physical health and longevity. Research by Sarah Pressman of the University of California, Irvine corroborates this work and demonstrates that while obesity reduces longevity in life by 20%, drinking alcohol by 30%, and smoking by 50%, loneliness reduces it by a whopping 70%, according to this article.
That's a high percentage.
Now we're talking about life expectancy here.
Yes. I mean, I meet with clients and I ask them, like, how many hours a day do you work? And some of them in specific industries work 10 to 12 hours a day, if not more. And they're always up in the air traveling. And then when I ask them, what do you do for fun or to relax? They don't know how to answer that question. It's a very, very simple question. And this is when the realization comes of how lonely they are, because you know, they're completely burnt out and the job is very, very demanding. And yes, it does impact their not just their emotional well-being, but their physical health as well. Absolutely.
Well, they're suggesting that in the workplace, there should be a promotion of positivity, the culture of the workplace. So inclusion and empathy, and allowing that time within your talent pool, within your employees, as the management, as the HR department, to actually be very aware of the personality types of your employees. And that is part of the working culture, is there's empathy, there's understanding, there's an allowance for socializing or some sense.
Celebrating successes and so on, including everyone.
Including everyone, exactly, and being aware of that. Now, busy people, busy managers, busy bosses are going to go, we haven't got time to take that on board as well as everything else.
Yes. Well, they say beware of the bareness of a busy life.
Well, we're laughing about it, but it is a concern for sure.
Very sad, yeah.
So what do you think? Let me know on 4001. We're addressing messages when we come back. Also, a simple cure for loneliness. We're going to be sharing that from a contributor, and we're going to be giving you some tips and tools to maybe strategize a little bit and manage that work-life balance and that sense of loneliness, making it and turning it into an advantage rather than a negative. Want to reduce this figure, 70% of reducing your life expectancy due to extended periods of loneliness. They're saying physically it's like pain. It's like the brain is sending a message through the cells of the body. We'll address that and more. And I am looking here at so many different stories of people that are identifying their sense of loneliness. We're talking about that with Sabine Scaff, who is a clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics based at JLT. Dr. Thryer is traveling at the moment. I'm very happy to, I always love having Thryer in, but I'm very happy to get Sabine in, because it's like dragging her in. It's like, come and talk to me on air. Your insights, your experience, it's always very interesting, Sabine, but I know you're always a bit radio shy.
So I am.
You're doing a good job today, so it's great to have you here. And because you can connect with Sabine and her team directly at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics based in JLT. And we have been talking about loneliness for the most part of the show, and you were talking before about understanding what you are in regards to personality, if you're an introvert or an extrovert. And we're talking about the Myers-Briggs test that you can do, and Donald's texting quite rightly to highlight that you know, when it comes to things like the Myers-Briggs test, if you take them 2 or 3 years apart, for example, you'll be at different points in your life, so your life experience, external factors, they change, and so therefore your results grades may change as well. So if you've had a bad social experience, you'll answer test questions in a certain way, and it'll be different than if you've had currently very happy and social and, and the like. So it's true.
It helps to think about, you know, any test results as being on a continuum. You know, it's not that black and white. So in psychology, you know, when you're dealing with the human mind, it helps to think on a spectrum and not like black or white type of thinking is not helpful. So what this person is saying is absolutely right. I mean, we grow, we change. We still have some elements that remain the same, but it depends on the social situation that we're in, absolutely.
We've been talking to someone in the break who contacted us today to talk about their wife. They've been married for 14 years. The family moved to Dubai from India. For this person, for the husband, it was a year ago. For their wife, just 2 months ago. But wife's a stay-at-home mom, and the husband was at work all day. And what the husband is describing here is that his wife sort of fell into feelings of loneliness or even maybe depression. Wants to get your thoughts, Sabine. The husband's saying that she lost weight. She was saying that she felt lonely, and that in the end went back home, but wants to bring the wife back to Dubai, but, you know, wants to make her feel more comfortable and happier. Now, one of the things that's been highlighted here, she didn't have any neighbors, she didn't drive, she wasn't meeting anyone. The only thing she would do was do errands, grocery shopping, and since going back to India, back home, to home country, she's feeling better and got back to normal. But when she was in Dubai, she lost 7 to 8 kilos, wasn't able to eat, was very unhappy indeed. This is not an unusual story, actually, I think,
for
many expatriates. Yeah.
No, and we've talked about this on previous radio shows, the expat wife syndrome, you know, or the trailing spouse syndrome, because, you know, the husband moves here, the family moves here, the husband's at work, and then you have lost family connections, friends connections, you have lost your frame of reference in terms of school, medical, and
culture.
So on. Exactly. So yes, it's the first couple of years in your expat life are very, could lead definitely to depression. With Tolin Badawi, the life coach at HRIC, we had a support group for expat wives. It was called Expat Wife, Expat Life, and it's to tackle the difficulties, the challenges, the concerns that these women are exposed to once they land in Dubai. And I'm telling you, it's not an easy, it's not an easy environment.
It's a transition. You have
yes,
to go through a transition.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you have to
course.
Be open to that. It's not going to be the same. You're not in home country. However, you need time to make that transition. And we've
you
been
need
talking
a support system.
I was going to say, we've been talking about loneliness, and if you are feeling isolated and not able to connect with other people that either share your culture to begin with, or you know, just you know, sense of humor, conversation that you can have together.
It depends on your level of comfort, on how often you can reach out to people. I mean, it also depends on your personality. It helps a lot. The transition becomes easier if you can build a support system quicker. But that's not easy for everyone, and it's not available for everyone. You know, some people come to Dubai, for example, like me. I had a few friends, so it was quite easy. I didn't have children at that time. But to come here now, when the city has changed so much and has expanded so much, from a country where you lived for 14 years and losing all these connections, and to want to create that similar support system is very difficult, and it takes a long time. So a lot of people do go back home. It doesn't mean that they are not strong enough. It doesn't mean that they are weak. It does not mean that they have not tried. It may mean that they need more time, or they need to find some other resources as well to come back here.
So if you're looking at that, which is what husband's hoping, the husband's hoping to bring her back.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got to help with this, you know, invite people over.
Yes.
If you've got colleagues at work who have a wife, you know, maybe you could get together through the children, meet people, go out and explore the city so you don't feel so overwhelmed with the city. Each weekend, visit a different location and get familiar with the geography.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think each consulate, they have like monthly meetings or attend those kinds of meetings to be part of your specific community, or depending on your place of worship, you know, maybe that could also be helpful. Because they do a lot of community gatherings.
Absolutely. If you've got an interest, a hobby, try and find that hobby and group here in the UAE. So when we're looking at combating loneliness, we're going to have a listen now to a talk by Baya Voci. It's a TEDx talk. It's called The Simple Cure for Loneliness. Now, Baya is the host of The Art of Connection. It's a web series looking to experts from across the globe on how to live your most fulfilled life. And that's what we've been talking about. Find your purpose to get that fulfillment. So in this TEDx talk, Baya reveals a simple tool you can start using today to create more happiness, fulfillment and connection in your life.
Loneliness is an emotional state that we have when we're feeling disconnected. But our need for connection is ingrained in our DNA. Loneliness is a signal, just like fight or flight, that something isn't right. But now more than ever, we're living alone. We're spending more time online and less time making meaningful in-person connections. So when emotional storms hit, things like losing a job or going through a divorce or a death, instead of leaning in towards our communities, we've learned to suffer alone. Blue zones are areas all over the world where researchers have found that people live the longest and happiest lives. The one thing that they all do in common, they focus on their relationships. What I found is that these societies have created something that I call an anchor of connection. An anchor is created simply by spending quality time with people who see, hear, and value you. But Baya, how do we create our own anchors of connection? The most powerful way to create an anchor is through ritual. Ritual is repeated action plus intention. When you combine repeated action and intention, ritual becomes ingrained in you just like habits do. Now, we've been gathering around fires forever to storytell and connect. For me and my girlfriends, our couches act as the metaphorical fire that we gather around. Every Monday night, we throw on our leggings, we head to one of our houses, and we just talk. But whether we're grieving or celebrating, we've ritualized Monday nights as our anchor of connection. You know, it's interesting. Now that I know what blue zones are, whenever I'm traveling, I'm always looking for blue zone qualities. And recently, I took a trip to France with some of the same girlfriends who I spend Monday nights with. In France, meals are rituals. So dinners, for instance, they start later and last longer. And whether it's two people or 10 people, you sit down and you enjoy the meal for at least 2 hours, and usually three, day in and day out. The French go back to the table for their ritualized anchor of connection. Our last stop in France was Nice. We arrived 12 hours after the Bastille Day attack, where the truck driver drove through the fireworks celebration, tragically killing 84 people. It would have been so easy for everybody to retreat, to disconnect, to suffer alone. But instead, what we saw were storefronts and restaurants opening their doors. And even just 12 hours after complete tragedy, people went back to the table. They went back to their ritual. We weren't in the mood to go out that night. So we went back to the apartment. We put on our leggings. We piled onto the couch. And we just talked. We went back to our ritual. What I know now is that connection isn't created by the things we go get. Connection is created by the things we go back to. So my invitation to you today is simple. Don't do something new. Find something you're already doing with your friends and families or in your intimate relationships or within your communities.
Interesting thoughts there. That's the TEDx talk by Bea Voce called The Simple Cure for Loneliness. And Bea is the host of The Art of Connection. So check that out. It's a web series and it looks to experts across the globe on how to live the most fulfilled life. Now, it raises some really interesting points there. Mm-hmm. Lean into your communities if you Absolutely. Have gone through some kind of trauma or change mm-hmm. or you're feeling out of sorts yes. and not feeling good about yourself. And then she talks about blue zones, the places where people are connected in a very fulfilled way. And it's about relationships where people have great
anchors.
Yes. I mean, I'm getting yeah. to the anchor, but the great connections with people. And then this anchor of connection, which is a great, great term.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is when I mentioned earlier that feeling of emptiness and void and feeling like the empty space. I mean, these anchors are so important because, you know, it makes you feel less lonely. So two things that she mentioned that are very important. When we think about friends, we think about large groups, but it doesn't have to be a large group. It could be very few people that you trust and support you and know you, you know. So when you think about wanting to be connected, it's not about the number, it's not about the quantity, it's actually more about the quality. And as we grow older, I don't know, I've noticed personally that, you know, your friends become less in number, but the relationship is 10 times stronger, you know? So this is one. Second, when you have a support system and you make it a ritual, what does that ritual give you? Why is it so important to sit around and talk and take time to talk and discuss things, whether they're celebrating or mourning? You know what you're getting out of the others? Validation. And I think this is what we want when we want to connect. We want to be validated and recognized no matter how we are feeling. We want the other to be our mirror, to give us that sense of reality and anchor. We're going back to this word, but I think it's so important. So, for example, this lady who went back home, she didn't feel validated. And feeling validated in your new community is very important because it makes you feel that you belong.
It also takes time if you're yes. arriving in a new place.
Yes, absolutely.
But that's what that's the sort of focus. You need to be looking for that anchor.
Yes.
So it's something that's familiar to you in yes. this strange landscape, but there, you will find it if you look for it.
Yes.
There's many different nationalities living here. Mm. If it's about that, if your anchor is about culture, you will find, usually you will find some element of that. It could be harder absolutely. For some more than others. Or if it's about an interest or a hobby, or if it's about
a talent
yes. or if it's about exercise, or if it's about if it's about cooking, then find a cookery group.
Yes.
But find that thing that anchors you. And what I loved about this piece was often, and it's part of the way we live today, and it's actually what we do on the show a lot, is always looking for new ways to inspire, looking for new things to engage us, looking for more information to inform us, to educate us. We're hungry for knowledge, and that's a wonderful thing. But what this is saying when it comes to loneliness is don't necessarily go looking for something new. Mm. Look for something that's familiar. That will give you a sense of place and calm, even if it's just for an afternoon. But that builds and that grows in filling
yeah,
that
and
void.
It's very soothing as well, because you go back to the familiar again. You go back, you know, ultimately feeling lonely is about feeling abandoned and rejected. You know, if you look back in our genes, you know, in the evolution, we don't want to be rejected. We want to be included. We don't want to be abandoned. So this feeling of loneliness sometimes do trigger fears of abandonment and rejection that we might have experienced earlier on in our life.
For sure. But that absolutely, I agree with you. And that's what all the, you know, the research, and you know, you're a psychologist.
Yes.
But I think to clarify that, it might, the loneliness might come as a consequence of abandonment, rejection, or the fear of. One article I read, which really, I thought really stood out to me, was it's about what you do with that feeling,
exactly,
as opposed to you let that feeling take you and you go, it's because of those circumstances. Mm. It might be because of those circumstances, but you can work your way out of that feeling just by some of the things we've talked about, unless it's become something more serious like depression, and then you might need help and assistance with it.
Of course, you know, sometimes I just have to say one sentence and people, you know, don't realize it. Adults cannot be abandoned. And this, when it's said in a session, makes so much sense and helps people realize in their own story what is being triggered and where is the loneliness feeling coming from. So you're an adult. You cannot be abandoned. You always have to trust that you have internal resources to combat that feeling of loneliness.
So there's some really interesting points being raised about the feeling of loneliness. As Sabine just said there, as adults, you cannot be abandoned. You have the resources within you to find the way, that way out of that feeling. If it's more than that, though, I mean, don't put too much pressure on yourself and take a bit of time and a bit of self-love and, you know, work it out. But if it becomes more than that, then it could be a sign of depression. And again, you said earlier, right at the beginning of the show, depression is an episode in your life, unless it becomes something more clinical. So ultimately, for many, you can work through depression and come out the other side. For others, you may suffer from depression for the rest of your life, but it can be managed and you can be helped through it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in our modern day society, we see a lot of people being experiencing depression and not even know it. It's called high-functioning depression. So these are people who are experiencing that sense of emptiness and loneliness, although everything around them and their environment, you know, is quite self-satisfying, is satisfying to them, but they still experience that sense of emptiness. This is high-functioning depression. They're not aware of it. And then when you tell them, they kind of agree and disagree and they get confused and we work through it. Now, high-functioning anxiety, high-functioning depression, because a lot of people don't recognize that this is what they're going through, unfortunately.
Now, when we're looking at battling loneliness, as it's been described here, there are different strategies. We've included quite a lot in the show today. Now, if you've just joined us and you want to hear the show in full, it will be podcast later this afternoon, so you'll be able to hear it, and all the rest of the shows at DubaiEye1038.com. We've got a podcast link there and on the Dubai Today page. According to Elizabeth Bernstein's recent Wall Street Journal piece, Alone or Lonely, the rate of loneliness in the US has doubled over the past 30 years. We've been talking about this, and she looks at strategies. So nurturing others, raising children, teaching about caring for animals helps us to alleviate loneliness. That's one thing you could do. Keep in mind that to avoid loneliness, many people need both a social circle and an intimate attachment. Having just one of two may still leave you feeling lonely. Work hard to get your sleep. One of the most common indicators of loneliness is broken sleep. Taking a long time to fall asleep, waking frequently, and feeling sleepy during the day. Sleep deprivation under any circumstances brings down people's moods, makes them more likely to get sick and dampen their energy. So it's important to tackle this issue as well. Try to figure out what's missing from your life while, you know, observing, you know, what's going on around you, inside and outside, external and internal. And take steps to connect with other people, as we've been talking about throughout the show. Now, I'm going to the phone lines, and I haven't got the name. Oh, it's Gulshan on the line, so let's just go to the lines. Hi, Gulshan. Hi.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for bringing up this topic. I'm good.
Tell me, Gulshan, what did you want to share with us today?
I just want to say, you know, that it's so important to volunteer in, you know, with people with special needs, because that's one community that doesn't judge you at all, and they make you feel so welcome, and You know, that's what I did when I moved to Dubai. I immediately started volunteering in the school for special needs. And that's where I made my friends. And, you know, I really felt needed. And, you know, it's 20 years down the line and I have found my purpose in life. And, you know, I think it's really important for everybody to volunteer.
This is such an important intervention because this is the first thing that I advise people to do when they feel lonely or alone in Dubai is I ask them to volunteer in shelters, any kind of NGO, and they find it to be very, very rewarding. So your intervention is very helpful. Thank you so much.
And Gulshan, I know that, and you know, you've brought it to my attention before through the show, which has been fantastic. And I know from my own experience working with people with special needs, there's a lot of joy comes into your life instantly.
Tremendous, you know. When I talk about them, I'm smiling. So,
you know, wonderful. Well, thank you, Gulshan, for calling today. Thank you so much. All the best. Take care.
Thank you.
It is such a good point to make, and actually, interestingly, off the back of that, when I'm looking at some of the strategies, it talks about here about staying open. Negative emotions like loneliness, envy, and guilt have an important role to play in a happy life. They're big. They're flashing signs that something needs to change. The pain of loneliness can prod you to connect with other people. Unfortunately, and this may seem counterintuitive, loneliness itself can make people feel more negative, critical, and judgmental. If you recognize that your loneliness may be affecting you in that way, you can take steps to counter it. Most people have suffered from loneliness at some point. Have you found good strategies for making yourself less lonely? Well, Gulshan's just demonstrated that.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, connect with your community in need.
Absolutely. I think reframing is key here. You reframe your loneliness. Think of it as an opportunity for growth. It's trying to tell you something. So if you reframe your mindset and instead of saying, I'm lonely, okay, just say, I'm alone right now. I'm not lonely. I'm alone. This is provisional. It's transitory. What can I do to not be alone or to feel more involved? And I think reframing is a very powerful tool.
And what you said earlier is that sometimes it's good to have that time with yourself and with your loneliness to a certain extent, and what can you learn from it, and what do you learn about yourself from it, and also that time to just sort of become more attuned not only to yourself but in your outside world as well.
I love attuned.
Now we're going to round off the show with this. Now you sent this in today,
yes,
Sabine. It's a beautiful, beautiful quote. It's a simple reminder: the capacity to be alone is the capacity to love. It may look paradoxical to you, but it's not. It is an existential truth. Only those people who are capable of being alone are capable of love, of sharing, of going into the deepest core of another person without possessing the other, without becoming a dependent on the other, without reducing the other to a thing, and without becoming addicted to the other. They allow the other absolute freedom because they know that if the other leaves, they will be as happy as they are now. Their happiness cannot be taken by the other because it's not given by the other, because it's not given by the other.
It gives me goosebumps.
So thank you so much, Sabine Scaff from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Connect with Sabine. You can do that via our website or directly, based in JLT. For now, thank you very much.
See you soon.